You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. In this She Leads Tech series podcast, we're speaking with Jan Babiak, a longtime Isaka member and an independent board director with Walgreens Boots Alliance, Inc., Bank of Montreal, and Euromoney Institutional Investors about mentors and role models for women in the tech workforce. Thank you for being our guest today, Jan. Isaka research on the underrepresentation of women in the tech workforce revealed a lack of mentors and lack of female role models as the top barriers experienced by women in technology. In your view, why is there such a hunger for mentorship and role models among women in tech?
You know, I think actually mentoring and that word is actually part of the problem because it gets overused, particularly within the, I'll call it the female community. When I think about the literally tens of thousands of people who've reported to me over the years, I don't know that I remember ever once having a man come up to me and say, "Will you be my mentor?" or coming up to me and saying, "You've been my mentor for years," and I'd never even met them. But women do this all the time. And I think when you think about the definition of mentorship, you know, which is kind of, you know, a senior person who nurtures and, you know, and helps you, it kind of brings on this sense of, oh, goody, I'll have somebody who's sympathetic to my plight. Whereas in reality, I would not recommend that women look for a mentor. And I don't have to recommend that to men because most of them don't look for mentors. They may mention it in passing when someone says, "Who's influenced your life?" They may talk about one, you know, male that was probably an uncle or somebody who has a family member who truly had, you know, that kind of nurturing and all of that, as opposed to having any kind of vested interest, which most of your bosses do and things like that. So I encourage women to definitely look at role models, but don't look for a role model. Look for a range of role models because, you know, if I'm learning to be better at a technical subject, I will go to a more of a subject matter expert. If I'm looking to be better with, you know, a people-related matter, I'll go to somebody who's better in that space. If I'm looking for someone who's trying to, you know, understand what's going on in Asia, I'll go to somebody who's there. So role models could be a composite. And so I encourage women to think about this as not thinking about a mentor ever. Think about role models, coaches, sponsors, counselors, subject matter experts, agents, bosses, assessors, critics, catalysts, motivators, exemplars, you know, guides, and educators. And think about using different people in different ways so that they are in control of their careers and driving them forward.
There probably are women in many cases who would love to have a role model or a sponsor, but are unsure how to go about finding one. Do those types of relationships tend to take shape naturally, or is there any advice that you might have for proactively forging them?
You don't have to say, "Susan, will you be my mentor? Will you be my blah, blah, blah?" You know, if for example, you were wanting to understand more about, say, women who work in law enforcement in the cyber world, you don't need to go to one of them and say, "Will you be my mentor? Will you be my coach? Will you be my sponsor?" You just say, "Look, I've been really impressed with what you've achieved in your career. I'd really be interested in your perspective on a couple of things that I'm focusing on right now." And that's flattering to people. And, you know, most of the time they'll come back and say, "Sure, let me, you know, fine." And you should, you know, offer to buy them a coffee or something like that. But it puts a huge amount of responsibility on someone when you say, you know, "You're my mentor, you're my role model." Because then your own insecurities kind of come in and you're like, "Well, I don't know if I should be anybody's role model. I get it wrong here." And, you know, we have all these kind of things. I mean, even men wouldn't like it if you walked up to them and said, "You know, you're gonna be the role model that I need." You know, I mean, unless somebody's got some huge ego. Generally speaking, you shouldn't look at it as trying to find the person who's going to do this. You should just kind of sit and look at what you need to develop yourself and then begin to find people who, you know, can help you with that, and then establish relationships with them based on, can you give me some advice on this, or I'd like your perspective on this. And then that you should always, always, always offer back, "Is there anything I can help you with?" And it amazes me the number of times that people, you know, ask for time, and they don't, you know, expect that there should be any reciprocity in that. And, you know, the people that you're wanting to give you this perspective and advice and all that, they're very busy people. And particularly if you're a woman and leader, you know, I get 5 requests a week for somebody who says to me, "Will you be my mentor?" And, you know, and I'm kind of like, you know, depending upon the role that they're in, sometimes I wouldn't make a very good mentor, and because a mentor should be kind of holistically interested in your outcome. And if I'm your boss, then, you know, I've got a duty to shareholders. And if you're really, really good at your job, my goal is going to be to keep you, even when, you know, maybe my heart would say you're better to go somewhere else. But, you know, you need to make sure you've got a variety of people in your life. And, you know, that ranges from friends to family to, and people who are really technically good at areas. And then you also need to have enough self-awareness and confidence to ignore about half the advice you get.
What type of results have you observed over the years among leadership teams that have gender diversity versus leadership teams that are more male-dominated?
It's a very, very stark difference, because there's the old saying that we all know, that great minds think alike. So if you have 10 people in a team that all come from the same background with the same demographics and been in the same company and graduated from the same types of schools and grew up, you know, as, you know, boys learning how to deal with it, you're going to get a lot of groupthink. And in my view, you've got about 9 redundancies if you have 10 of those. So it's really important that you bring diversity on all levels. It's not just gender. You know, I used to regularly use Myers-Briggs, which has been around for decades, but it helps you understand who were your, you know, innovative types versus who were your complete or finishers, you know, who were your more empathetic people versus who completely missing the empathy chip. And I would put together, I would understand what people's, you know, profile was, and then I would put them together in mixed teams so that I had some people constantly pushing us to be innovative and others to say, yeah, but we have to be practical here. We have to make money, and we've got to be able to deliver this. Do we have the resources to do that? So diversity of thinking is good. Diversity of gender, you know, they're just, you know, women have a very different perspective, and 50% of your workforce, which, you know, and frankly, we've been 50% women in the workforce in business, you know, since the 80s. We should be past the excuse of, well, when more women have been here, there'll be more in the top. You know, we're past that. So if you are, you know, an all-male team and half of your workforce is female, and, you know, there is a very good reason why you're losing women at a rate of knots, because they need role models that have had their experience. They need people they can go come talk to. And this is not about work-life balance, because actually men leave jobs more frequently for work-life balance than women do. There's all, again, study after study that shows this to be true. Women will leave because the person next to them got promoted over them and they don't understand. And part of that is because the person next to them went in and asked for a promotion and they didn't. And part of the reason they didn't was because society has a issue with women who get all uppity and ask for promotions, and they don't with men. And so when you understand the reasons behind that and you've done studies of gender differences, whether you're a man or a woman, studying that will help you do better.
To follow up on something you said a moment ago, is it your sense that those in hiring positions are as likely to respond affirmatively to women who seek promotions if they were to ask more often? Or are the responses that women receive when they advocate for themselves part of the problem too?
You know, this is not my opinion. There's a body of study that talks about the fact that when women ask for promotions and when women ask for raises and things like that, it's viewed as effectively not ladylike. And despite the fact that we're in the business world, we assign gender behaviors to people and what in terms of our expectations. And there was a study years ago by, I think it was Carnegie Mellon, where they looked at why women weren't asking for raises more, and they found in a blind study where they had men and women in, you know, these role model situations, men and women using exactly the same words and the same tonality and everything like that, and then they had men and women assess, you know, whether or not, you know, they would give raises to these individuals. And they would almost always give one to the men, but they wouldn't give it to the women because they weren't very likable. And we refer to that as the double blind, so that when women ask for these things, it makes them not likable, and because that's just not the way women should be behaving. And we then judge them as someone we wouldn't want to work with. And this is women, too. Women do this to women. Men do this to women. So to get to a position of leadership as a woman, you have to be likable. It's table stakes for a woman. And for a man, it is not. You know, we have many men in leadership who are not likable at all. And we kind of go, yeah, but, you know, he's really getting results. It doesn't happen with women. And then the interesting thing is if women then are in leadership and they become unlikable because they have to do something difficult, like, you know, have a retrenchment and fire a bunch of people, then they lose points and become even less popular. Versus a man, if he, you know, is in a position of power and does things that people think are nice and likable, he gets bonus. So it's what, as he said, it's what we call the double blind, because, you know, the nice woman doesn't get the extra points for being nice and effective at her job, but the guy does, and the woman gets taken down if she doesn't. And this is just proven in fact. So what do we do about that? Well, part of it is we educate people that that's going on, because, you know, we're all good people. We have positive intent. And when you know that that's going on, you know, because I've studied this for some years now, if I find myself, you know, falling into an unconscious bias, I've made it a more conscious bias by studying this and knowing it. And I immediately think, wait a minute, am I being fair to her, because the guy before her just asked for that, you know, asked for a raise, and I need to accept that it's okay for her to do that too.
Of course, teachers can be mentors too. What would you say about the role that the educational system can play in interesting more girls and young women in careers in technology?
Well, a part of that goes to, again, there's lots of studies that show that teachers, male and female, will favor boys. And, you know, there's a really interesting study about Harvard and the Socratic means of teaching, where you ask questions and get answers. And they were finding that when the end of the term came, the women weren't doing as well until they started having stenographers in the room who were actually taking notes, because they didn't remember the women making the points. But when they had to go back and look at the, okay, let's read this and see who made the points and all, they would find that the women made just as many points, and often good and better points. And so, you know, we just for some reason don't remember women doing things. You know, there's a joke among all of us who, you know, women, we're in leadership roles, we're in boardrooms, we're in all of this, and we make a point and it gets just passed over, and 5 minutes later, you know, some guy down the room, John, will make the same point. Everybody pearls in, oh, that's a great point, John. And you sit there going, am I invisible? You know, and it's one of these things that teachers, again, when they're aware that bias exists, they can do things to balance that out. And it's another reason why women often, if you look at women who are in leadership, they went to all-girls schools, because they're not playing favorites to the boys in the room as, oh, aren't you smart because you understand science? And, you know, are saying to the girls, you know, you really should study home ec, or don't you want to make sure you're a good wife? And these things got said to all of us and still get said today. So teachers have a big role in not only being role models, but they also need to make sure that they are not the ones who are instilling the gender bias in men and women, and boys and girls, if you will, at a young age.
What advice might you have for how men in the tech workforce can advance gender diversity within their organizations?
First of all, I think, you know, those of us, you know, in the world that you and I are in, you know, in the cybersecurity and IT security and risk and all of that, you know, we spend much of our career constantly being educated, constantly. You know, you cannot stay in this workforce based on something you learned 10 years ago, or even 5 years ago. You've got to be constantly, you know, updating yourself and moving forward. And we are diligent in doing that. And ISACA and all of those organizations require us to get continuing professional education. And we work it. We all work it, because we know our survival rests on that. Now, the interesting thing is, this precious few of us have had classes or studies around gender differences or unconscious bias, prejudice, harassment, bystander behaviors, or any of that. And the thing that men could do and women could do is become a student of gender differences. And there is so much written on this. You know, go back to Deborah Tannen's You Just Don't Understand, which was written, I don't know, 3 decades ago, but it's still an outstanding analysis of the difference between how women think and men think. Even look at the Mars and Venus, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. You know, more recently read Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In and all that. Once you do that, you become such a better boss. And I can give you an example myself. one of the things that I learned in beginning this study, you know, now for me about 2 decades ago, was the tendency for men, and this is, you know, there's a Venn diagram of men who don't behave this way and women who do behave this way, but let's assume it's binary for the purpose of this example. Men are more likely to walk into their boss at the annual assessment and give them pie charts and graphs of all the great things they've achieved and argue for why they should be a 5 on a scale of 5. Women are more likely to walk in with a, yeah, I'm sorry, but I didn't get this achieved, and let me explain to you why I didn't get that achieved and everything like that. Now, if you're a busy boss and you've got 10 direct reports and you are, you know, trusting the individual beneath you to give you the information you need to assess them, how are you going to assess the one who gave you the great pie charts of all they've achieved versus the one who gave you the list of things they didn't? Now, when I read this and I looked at my bias, I did have the women rated less than the men, and I'm a woman. So I created a level playing field, and I did this solely because I had educated myself and learned that this was a bias that society had and that obviously I had. So I then said, okay, everyone who is one of my direct reports, before we get into the annual assessment process, you will bring me your balanced scorecard from last year that we agreed reconciled to actual with what you achieved and what you didn't achieve. You will bring me your 360 rated by people above you, beneath you, and beside you, peers, and I'm going to agree with you in advance who's going to do the 360. You don't get to choose. I allow you to have a brag sheet where you come in and say, you know, even though it wasn't part of my job description, here are some other things I did. And then we'll also have your revenue numbers, your chargeability numbers, et cetera, like that. You will provide that to me a solid 48 hours before our meeting so that I have time to prepare. And then I also have the ability to do a read across so that I can assess, you know, how you're doing relative to other people, because market drivers will help dictate, because, you know, in a great year, I always say, you know, even turkeys can fly in a strong wind. So, you know, when the economy is great and sales are easy, you know, I expect everybody to, you know, overshoot their targets that we set a year ago. But if there's a downturn and a, you know, a big market correction in the middle, you know, it may be difficult to achieve that. So, you know, I want to look at relativities. Now, what was really interesting is I started seeing a whole different layout of performance across the piece, and it became much more balanced. And so, but that was me as a boss creating a level playing field. And I would not have done that had I not educated myself to these biases that are there.
What is your level of optimism for advancing women in the tech workforce going forward? Are you sensing substantial progress and momentum to address some of these challenges?
I'm sensing incremental progress, which is great, because there was periods of time when we didn't have that, but there is more awareness. There's more, you know, more being written on it, and it's coming into mainstream press. You know, you look at something, you know, the cover of Money magazine in March had one about how women invest differently. You know, the more we study this, the better we will get. And there are, you know, the girls in STEM, and we are making incremental progress. I don't believe we'll make, you know, really fundamental quantum leap progress until, you know, coming back to your question earlier about what do we do to get men engaged in this. I think we have to get men engaged in this, and it isn't tokenism, and it's not because it's the right thing to do. It's because it will make us stronger and more competitive as businesses, as countries, you know, as you know, individuals, that and even, you know, you'll be a better boss as a man if you understand this better. And when we name these biases, then, you know, we become better.
Wrapping up, you've noted the importance of having accountability when it comes to organizations encouraging gender diversity. What type of protocols or practices can be put into place along those lines?
Well, I mean, we all know the old adage, you know, that which gets measured matters. So I think just hoping people do the right thing, it will not work. And, you know, you often get asked the question, like, about women on boards, for example, because that's an area that is near and dear to my heart, of course, about countries that have established quotas. And people say, you know, are you a fan of quotas? And my answer is always, I abhor, I hate quotas. I just hate the idea of it, because you want things to be done on a meritocracy. But we do not live in a world where a meritocracy is possible. And so I want to know what my second choice is, because it's better than to have quotas is better than the status quo. So tell me what my next choice is, because it's important, the situation we have now. So I'm a big believer that we've got to start having targets and measurement around this, and that, and then held people accountable. And you know, and that can be, you know, fairly easy in that it can say every time you have a slate for a job, it needs to at least have 50% men, 50% women, and, you know, you can bring in other elements of diversity, too, that, you know, it has elements of, you know, ethnic diversity, people of color. There are a variety of things you can do. There are things you can do. Again, I don't think you should assign anyone as a mentor, you know, using the vernacular, the common vernacular, a male mentor for a female when he's had no training in unconscious bias or any of that. You know, that's just unacceptable. I think as we look at it, you know, you haven't asking questions about it yet, but, you know, if you look at something like the Me Too initiatives, because we know that, you know, more than, you know, depends on the statistics you look at, the lowest statistic I've ever seen is 50% of women have had experiences around this, and the higher ones said in the 80%. You know, what are we doing to measure, you know, both the reporting of and how we handle those situations? So we've got to have measurement. And the fact that you don't have reporting is usually not a good sign. People go, oh, we don't have a problem. No one's reported on the whistleblower line. Well, if 50% of society is experiencing that, then you're naive to think it's not happening in your organization. So that means you have a environment of fear where people aren't reporting it. So I think all of these things, we have to have some measurement so that, you know, sunlight is the greatest form of disinfectant in this, and, you know, and there are dozens and dozens of different measures that we can use. But then you have to hold people accountable for them, and sometimes that's difficult when they're, you know, outstanding performers in other areas. But if you find that, you know, as we've seen in the last, you know, 18 months or so, you've got people who have gotten by with some, you know, abysmal behavior with regard to how they treat women in the workplace, from discrimination to harassment, that were rewarded in many, many different ways, whether it was leaders in the entertainment industry or in the tech industry or anything like that. We just have to say that it's not acceptable.
Thanks, Jan. That's all we have time for in this edition of the ISOCA podcast. For more resources on this topic and to learn about ISOCA's She Leads Tech program, visit sheleadstech.isoca.org. Thank you for listening.